Am I good? Can I say that again? Good morning.
Good morning.
I need to see some smiling faces. Or no, I don't know if that's cheesing. That's cheesing, Preston. That's not smiling. That's like cheesing. So it's good to have you here. My name is Dorsey Atkinson. I'm the pastor here at Life Spring Church. And are you excited to be here?
Yeah.
Are you glad it's a little bit chillier, a little bit colder? Is anybody liking that? You know, I started out this morning with a sweater, and now I switched from a sweater to a shirt, and now I'm rolling up my sleeve. So this is Georgia weather. You know, you have to dress in layers and take it off, just like you're on the Appalachian Trail or something. Hey, this is an exciting day for me. Do you know why? Let me tell you why it's exciting. Let me tell you why it's exciting. Because I finished one of the greatest events that I've ever done. I have completed 7 weddings in 7 weeks, and yesterday was the last one, and this Sunday I don't have another wedding to do. 7 weddings in 7 weeks. That's just remarkable for me, because most pastors don't even get to do 2 or 3 a year. I got to do, I think I've done like 13, I don't know how many I've done this year, but it's been a lot this year. But 7 in 7 weeks is a stretch I've never done before. That means, you understand, 7 weddings in 7 weeks, just that period of time, is 15% of my weekends were doing weddings. You understand what I'm saying? And there's people in here that's been married, and I'm not complaining about any of them, but let me tell you, I dream the vows in my head every night. I'm like, to love, to honor, to cherish. I've got this stuff in my head. I've always scripted out the weddings and because I don't want to get emotional, or if I do get emotional, I can still do them. But I have been doing this wedding thing, and I'm happy to have a weekend off. There you go. So I'm just being honest, and then we'll start back up. Now, anybody else wants to go through marriage, we can get premarital counseling. We can get working on that now. So nominating yourself? Okay, I got you covered, man. So anyway, one of the scriptures that we use, one of the things that I do in a wedding service is that, you know, you do the greeting, the welcome, you know, has anybody been to a wedding this year? Hold your hand up if you've been to a wedding this year, okay? So in some form or has anybody in here been to a wedding in the last 2 or 3 years? I was going to say, I'm trying to think how long, because it's like been long enough. Okay, so so in the wedding, there's this part where what I call they load up, right? They load up. The girls' team loads up on that side, and the boy teams load up on this side. It's like, get in there, because you can't get married if they all load up. Then they come down, and then there's, you know, the boys' team has got the captain of the team, which is beside the groom, so he's sort of, that's the best man, and then there's the captain of the girls' team, and she's sort of standing there, and then they come walking down the aisle like Joel is right there. And actually, Joel, you're getting married in 2 weeks or 3 weeks?
3.
You better know. It's 3 weeks. See, now I said I'm not performing any more weddings, but I get to go to one more wedding. I have one more wedding to go to, but I'm not performing that one. So, Joel, we're talking about your wedding. We're talking about how this is going to happen. You know, the girls' teams are going to be over here. The boys' teams are going to be over here. They're going to come down the aisle, and you're going to see Nikki back there, and you're going to be all good. She's going to come in, escorted down by her dad, and then he's going to transition into being a pastor probably, and then you'll exchange the bride right here, and you do all this stuff, and then you walk up here, and then they'll do some other things. But in most of them, there'll be some scriptures read. In most weddings, there's a scripture read, or some scriptures, and you let the couple choose their scriptures. But many couples choose one from 1 Corinthians. Does anybody know the number? 13. It's called the love chapter. Now, the reason it's called the love chapter is because that's basically what it's talking about, is love. And you know something that you want to talk about to these people getting married, right? And so the premise is, I'm talking to them about what love is and what it's not. But really, I'm talking to everybody about what it is and what it's not. So this morning I wanted to start out by reading to you chapter 13 of Paul writing to a group of people in a town called Corinth. And so it's called 1 Corinthians. It's the first letter that he wrote. And so he writes this letter to this group of people who were religious people, who were church people, who were people he had formed a church with in this town called Corinth. And that church there might have had multiple campuses in that area. And so Paul would write a letter to one of them, and they would take and pass the letter around to others. It was, you know, Email, you can hit distribution and you can copy a bunch of people one email. They couldn't do that back in that day. They had to go just take the letter, read it out, and then somebody toted it down to another place and read it there and so forth and so on. And so Paul, in the 13th chapter, or I don't think you write letters with chapters, that's pretty long-winded, but they divide it up in chapters so it'd be better for us to understand. He writes these words. Listen to what it says. He says, if I speak in the tongues of men and of angels, but I have not love, I am only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. Now, I'm just going to just talk to you about this just a second. So what he's saying is, you know, if I can speak the best language, if I've got the golden tongue of Andy Stanley to preach or of Joel Osteen, if I have these great vocal abilities, and I can do these great things of talking to people about things, and I can just talk or sing like angels, but I don't have love, it's like my grandchildren in the kitchen playing with the pots and pans and spoons and making noise like that. Do you get that imagine? Can you get that in your head? You know what? You know grandchildren play with that stuff. They beat the pans and all. He says, that's what it sounds like. It doesn't matter how much you talk about church. It doesn't matter how much you talk about this. It doesn't matter how much you talk about great things of God and all that. If you don't have love behind it, you sound like a bunch of grandkids back there clanging on the stuff, making noise. That's what it sounds like to everybody else. Now, to those grandchildren, they think they're making beautiful noise or beautiful music. But to everyone else listening, it just sounds like a bunch of mess. And Paul's sort of talking to people saying this. He's like, you know, you understand what your words without love, just a bunch of noise. Then he goes on to say, he says, if you can fathom, or if you have the gift of prophecy and you can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and you have faith to move mountains but do not have love, I am nothing. So he's like, listen, even if you're a rocket scientist, if you can solve all the problems, all the mathematical problems, even if you're just this whiz, this business whiz, this whatever, you know, if you're Mark Cuban and you can on Shark Tank and you're Mr. Wonderful or something like that, and you can do have this knowledge and ability to do this, and you have this ability to where you can fathom all the mysteries, and you even have faith to invest in the right things and be able to do, I can foresee, I can anticipate what's going to happen, and you don't have love, he said, you are nothing. He's talking to church people. He's talking to people who come to church and who celebrate the things that we celebrate in church. And he's like, listen, you can have all the faith you want. And you can talk all about what God's going to do in the future. And you can understand the scriptures and be the best Bible study teacher there is and best person to teach the scriptures. And if you don't have love, you are nothing. And then he says, if I give all I possess to the poor and give over my body to hardship that I may boast, but I do not have love, I gain nothing. So he's like, you can put all your money in your wallet in the offering plate. You can sacrifice your time and volunteer and serve. You can come up here like Luke or Dalton or Jose or Marcus or the others that come up. You come up like the musicians and you can do all of this stuff. And if you don't have love, if you're not doing it with love or you don't have love, you gain nothing. Now, if you're church people, how is that sounding to you so far? It sounds like people in the church today to me. It sounds like that I hear people say, oh, I'm burned out, I'm tired, I've been doing these things, and why do I keep doing this for somebody else and they don't ever step up and they don't do anything? Why am I serving my time and giving my time, energy, talents, and gifts to serve others, and they aren't doing anything? It's about time they stepped up. When are they going to step up? And we get frustrated, and we get burned out. Anybody ever felt like that before? Anybody ever been involved in something where you're more concerned about what everybody else is doing because you know you're working hard, you know you're doing these things, you know you're doing these certain things, whatever it is, and they just won't do it. And it's frustrating. Paul goes on to say, let me tell you something about love. He says, love is patient. Love is kind. Does anybody know this? Y'all read this with me. Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. And it is not proud. So you can see me telling a couple getting married why this is important. Nobody else needs to know this. Just the married people. They're making a commitment, a covenant with one another. They're making a promise to love each other until death do us part. They're making these promises, so they need to know what's behind their promises. You can't just say these words and not have this love behind it. You got to understand that when you have this love, it's going to display itself with patience, with kindness. You won't envy what the other one's doing. You're not going to boast about what you've done. And you're not going to be proud, which opposite of proud means you're going to be humble. What's the next verse? It does not dishonor others. It is not self-seeking. It's not all about me. It is not easily angered. That means if they leave the toilet bowl seat up, you don't get ticked off women. You just get over it. You understand? It happens, I'm telling you. And guys, if they use all the toilet paper and there's none left, you don't get upset. You just get over it. I don't know how you get over it, but you just get over it. It doesn't keep records of wrong. And then you don't throw it back up in their face in several weeks about what they did back then. Does anybody understand what I'm talking about? That's just for married couples, because average people don't need to know that, right? Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. Next. It always protects. Read this with me. It always protects. It always trusts. It always hopes. It always perseveres. In other words, love never fails. Love never fails. And then in verse 13, he closes this passage out by saying this. Do we have that one? And now these three things remain: faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love. There's always going to be faith. There's always going to be hope. And there's always going to be love. But the greatest of these three, if you got to have one, if you got to have one that you're leaning on, I want you to have all three, but you need to lean on this. The greatest of these is love. And that's just for people who are getting married. It has nothing to do with the rest of the world. Or maybe Paul heard some of the stories that Jesus told. Maybe Paul, who was a scholar, who had a lot of knowledge, who had enough information. You remember, Paul may have been talking about himself in this story. Because you see, Paul knew everything there was about the Scriptures. Paul was a Pharisee, you see. He understood the Scriptures, had them memorized. The whole, what you would call the Old Testament, he's got memorized. He can not just find the page number, he can quote you what is actually being said. This is who Paul is that's writing this. He has a knowledge. He had a belief that when he was in that religious order of the Pharisees, that when Jesus came, that Jesus was going to be the downfall of the church, and therefore he persecuted the church, put pressure on them, and actually carried Christians off to be killed. And this is the Paul that's writing this, who met Jesus one time. After Jesus was resurrected, he met Jesus on the road and he went blind. And Jesus said something along the lines of, Paul, his name was Saul at that time. Jesus changed his name. He says, Saul, Saul, why do you persecute me? Instead, what Jesus was saying to Saul, listen, all this stuff you're doing to people who follow me is like doing it to me. When you hurt them, you're hurting me. When you're easily angered at them, you're easily angered at me. When you are prideful about, this is about me. And so Paul writes this. And we use it not for churches. We use it for a couple getting married. I don't think Paul ever had in his mind that was going to be read at so many weddings throughout the generations that would follow him. But what he did hope and pray was it'd be read to a church. Like us, a group of people pulled together to form a body that they would call a church or a church family. And see, I think when he started putting these things together with what he learned about Jesus, he began to understand some things. Now, over the last several weeks, we've been talking about Luke chapter 15. And in Luke chapter 15, it is, if 1 Corinthians 13 is the love chapter because almost everything, all the verses are reflecting or focusing on love. Then Luke chapter 15 is the lost and found section. Because every story, every parable in that chapter, in that little section of Luke is about things being lost and things being found, and the celebration that incurs with those things that are found. But I think it's more than about being lost. I think Luke chapter 15 is the love chapter. Let me show you why. Over the last several weeks, we've talked about things, and if you've been here or joined us online, then you understand that we've talked about in the last several weeks that the first part of Luke talks about, or Luke 15 talks about, a lost sheep. 100 sheep, one's lost. The shepherd goes, finds the one, leaves the 99, searches till he finds it, brings it home, and there is a party and celebration. There's another story in there about a woman who loses her coin, one of her 10 coins from her dowry. The reason I hold my hand up here, we imagine that it was like a headband that had 10 coins on it that was part of her family's dowry for her to get married one day, and she loses the coin, which means it devalues that, and so she searches carefully until she finds it. When she finds it and reattaches it, she's celebrating personally, but she goes out and they celebrate as a family or as a community because that's exciting news. So there's a party. Then Jesus tells a story about two sons and a father. And the story goes something like this, that the two sons were working for the father, lived with the father on his farm, on his estate. And there was an older son and a younger son. And the younger son tells his father one day, he said, "Dad, listen, I want my part of the inheritance." "You do, son?" Yeah, I do. I think I'd like to have my part of the inheritance." "Well, you know, son, we've been taking care of this together as a family, you know, and all that, but I understand that's your part, and because you've asked for it, I'm going to love you and honor you, and I'm going to give it to you." "Well, thanks, Dad." Now, the younger son's the one that asked. Now, in Jewish culture, if you were the oldest son, you got a double portion, just because you were born first. Just one of the things, the way they do. So the oldest son would get a double portion, and the younger son would get whatever it is. So let's just say that there's five brothers. Okay, let's just say there's five brothers. I'm making this up, okay? Five brothers. If the oldest one gets a double portion, that must mean there's really six portions, right? So the oldest one gets a double, and then each one will get... Does everybody understand that? Let's change it to a four. There's four brothers, okay? The oldest brother would get a double portion, right? Which means 20, 40, 60, 80. Nope. Well, let's change it to three. Maybe that made a mistake. I'm not the one that's got the knowledge in this verse here. There's three brothers, okay? The oldest gets a double portion. He gets 50%. Now I got something I can work with, yeah. Then the other brother would get 25, and the other brother would get, one gets a double. In this case, there's two brothers. There's two brothers. So if you divide this up, the oldest brother would get 66.67%, and the younger brother would get, so the dad does it. Takes all his accounts, takes his money, takes his stuff, and puts 33% in an account for the younger son. Everything's good. They go back to work. I'm sure the brother and his older brother talked about, "Man, what you doing, man? You asked daddy for the money? Why are you doing that? He's not even dead. You're cold-hearted, man. I can't believe you would do that." I mean, I can hear the older brother, because you know how older brothers are. We look after younger. Don't older brothers look after younger? Does older siblings supposed to look after younger siblings? Supposed to. I mean, it's one of those things. It's like, you know, you always see these stories where when the daddy leaves, and he looks at the son, and he's like, "I know you're only 8 years old, but you have to take care of your other three siblings." And then they go, and it makes good for scholarships when you sign up. "I'm the oldest, and I had to take care of my younger kids, and I need a scholarship to go to college." It works, I'm telling you. So what was I talking about? Huh? Oh, so you know they had a conversation, right? They had to have a conversation because the scripture says he stayed there for a while, but after a while, he decided to leave. The younger brother did. And if he's going to leave, guess what he's taking with him? His stuff. So he takes the 33% of his father's estate, which is his. Now, who's the other 66? It's actually the father's. But when the father passes away, who will it be? The older brothers. Okay, so he leaves. He goes out here. And you know how it is. You got a pocket full of money. It's just burning a hole in your pocket. You know, it's just burning a hole in there. So he gets out there, and he's spending on whatever. He goes to the bars, and he's sitting there going, round for everybody. I got the next one. I pick up everybody. And everybody goes, whew, we like this guy. 2 or 3 days of this, man, they're drinking, they're partying, they're having a good time. He's just buying drinks for everybody, and everybody is this guy's friend. He actually gets out there, plays some poker game. Hey, man, they'll invite you into poker games and all because you got money, man. Come on, keep coming. He's not a good poker player, but they tell him he's a good poker player, you know? And he just keeps losing. Then he gets a little bit lonely, and he's sort of wanting some affection. And he just doesn't want to go through the process of dating and all that stuff. So he just goes and pays a couple women and gets some prostitutes and go ahead and have his fun and all that. Because he's always trying to do. See, he's just trying to be his own man. And he just, you know, Daddy did it the hard way. Daddy did it the long way. It took a long time for my father to do this. But I just want to take the shortcuts. And he keeps taking these shortcuts. And before long, he's burned through all of his money. And all of his shortcuts of not doing the things that his father had taught him on all those years led him to where he had nothing. And guess what happened to all his friends at the bar? They ain't loaning him any money. Won't give him a cigarette. The women, they ain't coming around him because they weren't coming around for anything but the money. So now he's alone, destitute, no money. He's like, I might find a job. And so he goes out and he can't find a job. A famine hits the area. Nobody's eating. He's there and he goes to work for a pig farmer. And I'm not sure if that's the only thing the guy did, but he just